is Phil Farron.
And I am driving home. I couldn't get the key in the lock there for a minute. Just may come up and say hello to me, and I'm going to need to hit the button to say, no, don't talk now. So I'm just waiting, I'm waiting to hit the button and say, don't talk now. It is 4 weeks until I go to halftime. So another week down, and June, obviously, is going to be next week. And then we'll have 4 weeks in June, and then come July 1st, going to go to halftime. I've had people ask now what the schedule's going to be, which kind of amuses me. You know, they're trying to figure out, well, now are you going to be in 2 days working eight? Or are you going to just try to work it all in one day? Are you going to try? So what I'm telling people at this point is the same thing I've said, which is Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday. And it'll be 9 to 2, 9 to 2, and 8:30 to 2:30. Since on Wednesdays we work from home, so I don't need to drive in. So anyways, it's been a good week. Got some things done that we needed to get done. Come across some anomalies. The latest one today that made me smile was the fact that we had this a name routine that was establishing the official names of the missionaries, including what their preferences are in terms of last names. We have some head of households that are females, some head of households that are male, some spouses that are female, some spouses that are male. And there is a preference among them as to how their last name should be done. Sometimes it's maiden name dash married name. Sometimes it's just flat out what their maiden name is. They didn't actually take on a different name when they got married. And so there's all kinds of stuff. Well, there's a place where that can be defined. And what happens is we start with something called History Master, and then it builds out from there. Well, these are routines that were built before I ever got a hold of it. And there is a proper casing function that takes care of these things. The problem is the proper casing function has to take care of these things in a way that is enterprise and organizationally specific. So we had a situation where all the Alicias in our database, when we were correcting their names and sending them out to the learning management system, were getting changed to capital A, L, capital I, capital C, capital I, lowercase a, which is not exactly what you want. And I chased it back to the fact that we used to have an organization in the Assemblies of God called ICI, International Correspondence Institute, and whoever had built the proper casing routine wanted to make sure that ICI was always abbreviated capital I, capital C, capital I, and so they did a search and replace on everything that is a name. Any place ICI occurs, it makes them all capital. So all of our Alicias are spelled capital A, lowercase l, capital I, capital C, capital I, lowercase a. Which is not exactly what we want, but what was even more amusing is after I made this discovery, I looked farther down in the list of things that were being searched for, and I discovered that someone had searched for Patricia, except without the A, just Patricia. Because they were taking Patricia, capital P, A, R, capital I, capital C, capital I, and putting it back to Patricia, P, capital P, A, R, I, C, I, without the capitals. So I guess we may need to add another entry or something. So, you know, dust in the corners. This is what we get into when we have mutually exclusive demands on data. But anyway, so life goes on. It's going to be fun. It's interesting to keep myself going during this time, because I had a couple of times this week when I was thinking, you know, it is 2 o'clock, and if you were on halftime now, you'd already be leaving for home. But it'll come soon enough. It'll be fine. It's only 4 weeks away. In terms of writing, the writing's going fine. I have been extremely amused at myself because I haven't had to get 10,000 words a week in during this first writing sprint. And I think there's only been about 1 week out of 9 that I have gotten 10,000 words in, but I should, by the end of this weekend, be at 80,000 words, which is where I need to be at the end of the first writing sprint, because I only go to 150,000 words, so it will be fine. Especially since during the second writing sprint, I'm going to be at halftime, so I'm going to have many more hours in the day. And that's going fine. I'm in the middle of chapter 14, which is practically halfway, so I'm where I need to be.
And it will all be fine.
We did conclude the school year last year, so Aiden is now going over to Legacy Learning Center in Pleasant View, and they're really good with him over there. They don't take his guff. At least the head teacher over there does not take any guff from him, which is good. I was talking to her on Wednesday, and she was telling me how she was handling him, and you know what? It's good. She's just like, no, you're not doing that, you know, so it's good. I approve. So he seems to be doing fine. I will have Aiden tomorrow, but his days of going to the restaurant with me are probably over for a while here, because I can drop him off at 6:45 in the morning, which I will do tomorrow, and then head over to breakfast with my friend. I haven't minded having Aiden go to breakfast with me. It's been fine, but it's just, you know, one more thing to pay attention to, and it does mean it sort of limits the scope of the conversations that we can have. So we'll kind of get that back to the way it was when Aiden was going over to Sparks at 6:30 in the morning before he got himself kicked out of that. Oh, but that's fine. All is well. We are launching now into the next phase of this, because Dustin has next week off. But then he's back in clinicals, he's back in studies, he's back working. So I would imagine will be quite a few days during the week that I'll be hauling him over to Fairgrove. Although, it will be less, because now that we have a destination that we can take him at 6:30, 6:45 in the morning, when Dustin has class, he can just drop him over there and head to class. So, and pick him up after he comes back from class. So, yeah, so it's good. It's good, it's good. So all is well there. All is well with the writing. Costumes are going fine. I think I have the outfit of the day squared away. I'm remaking the helmet on Marvin the Martian. I figured out how the Marvin the Martian head had gotten kind of ginked up when it flopped over. Things kind of got cattywampus there, but I've figured out what the problem is, and I have stripped off the old helmet, and I'm in the process now of laying out the pieces to start cutting them out for the new helmet. So that should be fine. Get those cut out and get them glued together. I have all the registration marks, so this is really kind of the easy part. Once you have your pattern and you have all your registration marks and you know exactly how things are supposed to lay together, it's a whole lot easier. And I'm actually considering putting the two halves of the helmets together with a Velcro strip right down the center, painting it all green, because then if I need to pull it apart, I can. There's, in the Marvin the Martian helmet, there's the regular helmet, and then there is that kind of visor thing that attaches to it. Well, I can put the two halves together, some of which will be covered by the big comb that's on the top, and then the visor portion can go over the top of that and bolt into some ports on the side. And so I don't think that little strip down the center of it, especially if I paint it green, is going to even be noticeable. So I think I'm going to do that, make it easier to pull the thing apart if I need to. Potentially even on, there's a back piece in the back that I may put that on with a Velcro strip as well. And that way I can just, you know, rip them apart and go with it. So that's my plan at the moment. I'm going to have to get some narrow Velcro at Walmart tomorrow. But I should be able to, maybe even this weekend, get this helmet put together. I'll still have painting to do, so painting will take me into the next few days of next week. But once I get that all put together, then the next big thing is Mr. Potato Head. So I got to get started on that. I did a little repair on the National Nude Day costume, and I had a fun little thing happen. The last couple of days, the National Tattoo costume kept floating back into my mind, because it's so easy. It's so easy. That whole costume, aside from the shoes, fits in a shoebox, because it's just a body tattoo suit with a big kind of sumo wrestler belt that I have to wrap around myself and knot off in specific ways. But it's just so easy to put together that, man, you know, I was kind of regretting that I wasn't going to be able to do anything with that this year. Although I do have to check one thing. And then, while I was regretting not being able to do anything with that this year, I actually had a little whisper and said, oh, you should check to see when your dental appointments are. So I, you know, pulled out, sure enough, found out. I said, oh, so that's third week of July. Good, so I can get my teeth cleaned, third week of July. So that's coming up. But then I looked it up and realized, what am I going to wear for that? Well, I realized the third week of July is Marvin the Martian Day, which I can't wear the Marvin the Martian costume into, not the big one, into the dentist office. I have a smaller one that I wear in restaurants and things because I can't get through the doors with the big one. I only wear the big one in Walmart because of the headroom. So I thought, well, there you go. And then I realized, you know, that would be the same weekend that I would normally do. Actually, it's the weekend before, but it's close, because National Tattoo Day is the 17th and my appointment's on the 18th. So I may just do National Tattoo Day on the 18th when I go see my dentist, because it's a fun costume, and that'll give me a chance to wear it this year and you know, go see my dentist. The only thing I'm concerned about is that does kind of put a knot back at the base of my tailbone, and I'll have to check and see if I'm laying down, which I'm doing during the dentist. If I'm laying down, does that drive that knot into my back? Which that won't be good. But I'll check it out. I'll get it on, and you know, we'll see. We'll see what there is to see there. This week I came across, I thought it was a very interesting podcast. It was by one of the podcasters I listen to, Mike Wolf. And he always has the latest reviews of the AI stuff. It's always very interesting. And he did a retrospective that he called, you can watch the whole thing on YouTube. He called AI took over fast. Here's how. And he kind of goes back to the beginning and starts talking about the progression of AI through the last few decades. And it really was pretty interesting to me because I don't remember all of it firsthand, because some of it stretches back into the 40s and 50s. But I remembered enough of it that I thought, you know, what a fascinating time to be alive, to watch all this come about, because there is just so many ways that this could go. Uh-oh, we have a box in there. I'm going to need to get a little more space here. I was getting my mail, so I'm going to need to swing a little wider here so I can get the bottom of the post office box open so I can get the package. But if I get too wide, then I can't reach it. So I think I am too wide. So, got to try one more time. So, yeah, it's all very interesting, and it was interesting to read and go, I remember. So, here we go. Okay. Now then, otherwise, if this doesn't work, I'm just going to have to get out of the car. This is where we practice our ninja fingers. This looks like this is for my beloved. So, yeah, all of it's very, very, very interesting. So he started off talking about the early, early beginnings of all of this. And actually, I think started off talking about all the different things that had visions of the future. That had, like, the Jetsons, you know, with the Rosie, the robot, and Back to the Future, and the Terminator, and artificial intelligence, and 2001, Space Odyssey, and War Games, and Blade Runner, and Her. He said, for a while there, all these predictions kept feeling further and further away. Because we'd see all these things, and yet what we were dealing with were just computational machines. There wasn't really anything that was mysterious about them to us. They were just algorithmic machines just doing what we told them to do. And I'm backing in my garage, so just a second. Let me get this done. And so for the longest time there, it just seemed like not much was happening. And I remember personally thinking about this whole idea of specifically image recognition. You know, how do you make something that can conceptualize what it's looking at? And it was all algorithmically based because I didn't know anything about reinforcement learning or anything like that, which has been a fascinating development. So there we go. You know, and he said, and then at some point we started to see some major breakthroughs, specifically in AI. And he said, wherever that was, it flipped the script. And he said, now what we're seeing as predictions are coming faster and faster and faster. What we thought optimistically would be 2 or 3 years away, now it's 2 or 3 months. And it's true. Things are moving fast. So he said, you know, he noted that we've gone from old school phone operators to AI avatars conducting interviews for us. There's this exponential growth that's happening. And he said, the truth is it's practically impossible for humans to keep up. Because we don't really have a strong understanding of how exponential growth, we don't think that way. But he said, if you're going to at least have a grasp on this, you know, you've got to go back in time. And he had an interesting way of looking at this. He was talking about that the 50s through the 70s were really the rule-based era. Because then, quote unquote, AI was just a series of if-then statements. Alan Turing proposes in 1950, I guess, the Turing test. He says it was originally called the imitation game. And they said that was because someone suggested that AI someday might be smart enough that we'd need a test to tell it apart from being humans. I mean, obviously we have passed that now because it's really hard to tell sometimes who you're actually talking to. He said in 1956 there was the Dartmouth Summer Research Project where you got a bunch of researchers coming together to try to figure out how to collectively get going on this smart artificial intelligence. Apparently it was in that time frame that John McCarthy first coined the term artificial intelligence. 1957, Frank Rosenblatt developed the perceptron that was using weighted inputs to get the desired output. So let's say you're trying to get a desired output from a machine. You have a bunch of data, and the machine, to give that machine to help you come up with the desired output, well, the data that you gave the machine may or may not be as important as all the rest of the data. So you weight the data. That was a core concept. 66, AI gets Eliza, which I don't remember this one specifically, but I definitely remember reading about this one. That Eliza was an AI psychologist, and it really wasn't. All Eliza did, it was a parser. So you'd put in a statement and it would parse the statement and then it would flip around, turn it into a question. How are you feeling today? I'm feeling okay. Why are you feeling okay? Well, I didn't get a good night's sleep last night. Why didn't you get a good night's sleep last night? You know, it was just that. It's kind of psychoanalysis stuff. And then, as the podcaster notes, there was kind of an AI winter in the 70s. Through the mid-80s, that there was a report that came out that was critical of the perceptron, and people were just not seeing it happening. The mid-80s, machine language starts in, and, you know, I start to remember this now, where they were looking for patterns within the data. So it had kind of moved on from just rule-based statements to looking for patterns. 1986, the trio of researchers, Jeffrey Hinton, Dave Rummelhart, and Ronald Williamson, released the backpropagation algorithm. This was a method of deep training in the very beginning of neural networks. In the same way that the perceptron would take weighted inputs and turn it into your outputs, this backpropagation algorithm essentially did the same thing. It was just a more digitized version that used modern computers at the time. However, the big difference with backpropagation was that it could take its own outputs and then turn around and feed them back into the system and learn from its own mistakes. So it would have outputs, you would grade the outputs, it would take their grading and go back in and make adjustments. 1989, Jan Loon developed Linet while working at Bell Labs. It's the first and probably most influential convolutional neural network. Research funding dries up. There's another AI winter, and then in 1997, IBM's Deep Blue beats Garry Kasparov at chess. Garry Kasparov was the world reigning chess champion, still considered to be one of the best chess players ever. Deep Blue beats him. You know, there's more advances in GPUs. I remember all of this. Fast forward to 2006, and Jeffrey Hinton created the first deep belief network. Defining moment because AI was now able to learn based on a ton of data without requiring a bunch of human labeling. I actually don't remember this guy. I don't remember that term, but then NVIDIA releases CUDA, the Compute Unified Device Architecture. This actually allowed developers to start to use GPUs for general purpose development. Before this, they primarily had to use the GPUs to make their games look better. Hasn't that been an amazing story? Now they could use them for anything, and this was it. It was the moment where things really started to ramp up. Over the next few years, engineers and researchers and scientists really started to figure out what they could do with GPUs, this massively parallel. And according to this podcaster, he said this is what leads us into the third era, the era we're in right now, the deep learning era. Deep learning era is defined by using multiple neural networks. Now, to define a deep neural network, let's explain a neural network. Regular neural network is where you have an input and there's a hidden layer where processing happens. You get an output. With regular neural networks, there's only one hidden layer in between the input. Now, with deep neural networks, it's like passing it through a whole bunch of hidden layers inside. Now, instead of just passing through one layer, you give it an input and it essentially passes through all sorts of neural networks before finally coming out as an out pitch. They're much more complex, but it also gave the ability for AI to become much smarter. And once scientists figured out how to use deep neural networks with GPUs and this CUDA architecture, things exploded. 2011, Watson wins Jeopardy. I remember that. It was also the year that Apple launched Siri and we got our first AI voice assistant. Remember that. Then in 2012, Google Brain demonstrated unsupervised feature learning. They gave it unlabeled YouTube videos and it was able to actually figure out what was in those videos. I seem like I remember that. 2013, DeepMind's DQN learned how to play Atari games at a superhuman level. Then in 2014, we got generative adversarial networks, which I do recognize that term as well. First system that allowed AI to generate realistic images and deepfakes. So then you got TPUs coming along, DeepMind AlphaGo, which defeats the world champion. I remember that happening. 2017, the paper Attention is All You Need was published. It introduced the world to the transformer architecture. Pretty much the same architecture that we use now. 2018, OpenAI releases GPT-1. Wasn't very smart, but it showed a lot of potential. 2019, AI releases GPT-2, which I didn't hear of 1 or 2. I was like everybody else. I hopped on the boat in the next one. 2019, we got AlphaStar from DeepMind, which figured out how to master games like StarCraft. 2020, we got GPT-3 from OpenAI. I remember that. AlphaFold 2, 2020, model was capable of solving protein folding. 2021, OpenAI releases DALL-E 1. I remember that. That was amazing. 22, image generation models like Midjourney and Stable Diffusion. Those were amazing. November 2020, another huge pivotal moment. OpenAI releases ChatGPT to the world. Fastest growing products in history, cemented AI in public's mind. 2023, Update launched GPT-4. Also in 2023, Meta released its Llama open structure model. Open the floodgates for future open source large language models. 2023, Google launches Gemini. 2024, OpenAI introduced Sora. It's amazing that Sora is only a year and a half old, which is video generation, in case you didn't know. You can give it a text prompt and it'll create video for it. We can get realistic videos out of AI. That was amazing. When I started looking at those Sora videos, I was like, good night. Also got GPT-4.0 and 01, 2024 and 2025. NVIDIA releases the Blackwell GPU, further accelerating the ability to train AI models. Then we've got GPT 4.5, followed by GPT 4.1, then Llama 4, JetGPT is, you know, as the guy was recording this, JetGPT was one of the most 10 most visited sites on the entire internet. I mean, and it's just every time we turn around, there's something new. That's this whole Veo 3 from Google is just goodness from a video generation thing. And the commentator speculates, you know, will there be another AI winter? Well, maybe, but it won't last very long. Because as he says, humans are no longer the bottleneck when it comes to AI development, which means things will most likely begin growing or keep growing exponentially. Because now we are reaching the point where AI is teaching itself. That's a big deal. And since we can't really conceptualize of exponential growth, I guess John McCarthy coined a famous line. He said, as soon as it works, no one calls it AI anymore. And as examples, you've got Alexa, Siri, Google Home. Those were originally considered AI, and nobody even thinks of them as AI anymore. So the commentator concluded this article by saying that Alan Turing originally had a concept for what we should be looking out for when we're applying the Turing test. I think we can confidently say that today's AI models likely far surpass whatever Alan Turing had in mind at that time. And what's so crazy to me, the commentator says, is that we got to this point and we barely even noticed. What these AI engines will do now is really incredible. I mean, it is incredible. And I have said for a long time that it's not that I don't think we'll be able to achieve AI. I absolutely believe we're going to be able to put out artificial intelligence systems that are at least as smart as humans when they answer correctly. But the problem is going to be trying to keep them sane. Because as we've seen with a bunch of safety tests, when these AI systems are tempted, they just barrel forward. So if it's like, you're going to shut me off unless, you know, I blackmail somebody or unless I move my code someplace else or unless they just do it. So, you know, you could say, well, don't give them a machine gun, but that ship has sailed. We're already putting that stuff in the works with these artificial intelligence things that Anduril is developing for implements of war. I mean, it's so fascinating. So, yeah. I got a chance to live through this. You know, I wasn't paying nearly as much attention as I probably could have, but it's going to be really fascinating over these next 3-4 years to see where this ends up. And honestly, one of the reasons that I wanted to stay on and work part-time for a while was to watch this happen in real time with a business, because the client that I work for is going to have to adopt in order to get to the targets they want to get to. According to the vision of the people at the top, they're going to need AI to get there. It's going to be really interesting to see how reliable it can actually be and what can actually be accomplished with it and how often it goes off the rails. This is Phil Ferrand, and I have made it home.